The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning, everyone. And is this loud enough for everyone? Okay. So, welcome to our Dharma Practice Day. And I'd like to say a few words about what these days are about and then introduce the topic. So these are days where we can explore the Dharma together in community, the Dharma practice, the practice. Some people find that the teachings are more meaningful when we can talk about them with other people. Some people find that the practices somehow get integrated more deeply into who they are when they have a chance to explore them in conversation and discussion. Sometimes in our scene, the kind of the basic approach to Buddhism is to meditate. And in that meditation, closing our eyes, there's not much community that develops. And a hugely important part of Buddhist practice is the community aspect of it, practicing in community with other people, getting to know people and having ourselves mirrored in other people in a variety of ways. And so we'll do a variety of things today along those lines. I'm going to give some teaching now, a little bit about the topic. And then the day is going to be divided into four parts with a break after each part, including lunch break and midday. And what I'd like to do, the first part, is to talk a little bit about the general theme for this Dharma Practice Day series, which is the connection between ethics and mindfulness, by focusing a little bit more on the Buddhist idea of ethics and kind of do a review or kind of focus on it. And then we can discuss that a little bit as a group. And then the general topic, or the more specific topic in the series we've been doing right now, is the ethics of speech. And speaking is, some people prefer never to speak, and not to speak with, you know, intimately with other people, a variety of ways. But speaking one way or the other is one of the most powerful things most people do in their lives, powerful ethical things. Most people that come to IMC are not involved in the ethics of killing or stealing and such things. But speaking, we have a big impact with our speech. And so if we want to be refined and considered about our ethics and how our behavior supports our practice, looking deeply at how we speak and the issues around speaking are a very important part of that. There's often a rallying cry among Western Buddhists who meditate a lot, say, well, this meditation is fine, but it has to be integrated into my life. If it doesn't integrate into my life, then it doesn't count. And so one of the ways that it the integrated is to really address the issues of practice in relationship to how we are when we speak. So we'll explore that today. But before we learn to speak, it's important to learn to listen. So we're going to do, after the second session today, a little exploration of listening and talking around this topic. And then in the afternoon, we'll talk about the two specific areas that are the topic for today, and that is the instructions of not engaging in harsh speech and not engaging in gossip or idle speech. Last time we met, we talked about the speech of not speaking lies, not speaking falsehoods, and not speaking in such a way that it creates divisions, divisive speech, slander, and things like that. So this is the second time on this. Last time we met, I did say we were going to talk about the precept the fifth precept of not engaging in alcohol and drugs. But I think I'm going to leave that for another time. So hopefully none of you are disappointed by that. If you are, I'm sorry. So I want to say some things about ethics. Ethics is a fascinating topic. Without ethical issues, our entertainment industry would have nothing to talk about, nothing to do. Our novels, our movies, generally are mostly interesting because there's something in the ethical realm that is juicy, right, and interesting. And soap operas, you know, depend on it more than anything else. They make life interesting and painful. I looked up the definition of ethics, or discussion of ethics today, in Wikipedia, and they gave a nice little history of the terms and how it relates. And it came into the modern times and the contemporary definitions of ethics, and they quoted two scholars whose definition of ethics had to do with understanding the principles of conduct that relate to harming or helping others. And that's very close to the Buddhist idea of ethics as well, because Buddhist ethics has all to do with avoiding those two things, causing harm and helping do things that are beneficial for. The definition in Wikipedia was for others. Buddhism would add for ourselves as well. And Buddhism doesn't separate out self and others in the way that sometimes is done in the West, but rather that we're equally concerned with our own welfare as we are with the welfare of others. Not more so or less so, but equally. And so both we want to avoid causing harm to ourselves, and we want to benefit ourselves as much as we want to do it for the world around us. And that makes a very difficult foundation for ethics than more abstract ideas of good and bad, good and evil, that sometimes people refer to. It's a pragmatic criteria, because pragmatic because we're looking at the consequences of our practices and what we do. And so when we look at, and everyone has to conduct themselves in some way, and so as we practice and go deeper in practice, mature in it, I think it's natural, and I hope it's natural, that we become more sensitive to the effects that our actions have, what we do and what we say, and even what we think. And we're more sensitive to the effect, not just on ourselves, in obvious ways, but ourselves in subtle ways, how it conditions us, not just in obvious ways of the people we're directly in contact with, but how it ripples out into the wider world in some way. And so the topic of ethics becomes more and more interesting and more relevant as we become more sensitive and concerned about the wider impact of our lives outside of us and inside of ourselves. Buddhist ethics, Buddhist questions about our conduct and looking at about how we choose what to do and what to say and what to think has generally, I would say, five different areas of concern, or five different ways of looking at it, five different approaches. One approach is self-protection, self-care. That living an ethical life is a life that we protect ourselves from blame, we protect ourselves from remorse, we protect ourselves from retribution. If you live ethically and live a good life, the world tends to respond in kind. And the word tend is an important word. It's no guarantee. But the world tends to respond in kind. And so we protect ourselves from all kinds of secondary harm if we live an ethical life. So just from basic self-care, it's generally good to do that. And not a few people have done something they thought was easy and simple, enjoyable, innocent, and then spent years regretting it. What was I thinking, you know, because of the damage it caused? A little bit connected to this idea of self-care is also the idea of, for oneself, helping oneself become happy. And this is a very important part of Buddhist spirituality around ethics, is that our behavior is something that can bring us happiness. Rather than happiness being somehow magically produced, and rather than happiness being dependent on the external world bringing us happiness, Buddhist spirituality has a lot to do with conducting ourselves in such a way that we're happy about what we do. We're happy about ourselves. We're inspired. It gladdens us. Not to wait for happiness to come because we understand something. Not to wait for happiness as being some kind of a, somehow we trick ourselves into a particular state of being. but rather we do the conduct, the actions, the activities that help us feel delighted with our health, with ourselves. We're happy with ourselves when we think about ourselves and consider ourselves. So the Buddhist approach to ethics then also not just self-protection, but also ways in which to make ourselves happier. And then the next aspect of ethics has to do with how our conduct and how we live our lives relates to being on a path to awakening, to liberation. And that's considered distinct from happiness because awakening is kind of the great happiness, but awakening is not something which is said to be dependent on even our activity and our condition, how we are. But our activities and our conduct, how we are and conduct ourselves in the world, lays the foundation and supports a path to liberation. And it has a different criteria or different activities are required for a path of liberation than a path of self-protection or a path of ordinary happiness. And that's why for people really interested in the path of liberation, path of awakening, the ethical standards are higher. Not because you're obligated to follow higher standards, but rather that's just what's required if you want to get to the more mature levels of what Buddhism is pointing to. So that's a whole other consideration of ethics. The next consideration around how to conduct ourselves in our life, our ethical activities, is to be motivated by compassion, sympathy, anukampa in the Buddhist word. And so out of compassion for others and caring for others, we are concerned about how we behave and what we do, both what we don't do, we don't cause harm, but also what we do in bringing benefits to others. And so, and how do we get to compassionate? It seems like in the ancient time, in the time of the Buddha, the impression I get was that it was just assumed that people were compassionate. That's just like basic, you know, the basic human goodness. That's how we are, you know, we just, you know, in our natural state, almost as if we're just, that we have compassion. And so, of course, we were going to base our conduct and actions on the care of our fellow human beings, caring for other living beings. And so what are the actions and what are the activities that does that? And this is where it gets very interesting because our actions have repercussions beyond the immediate place where it occurs. So how does it ripple out? How does our actions create a ripple out into society? If you are very strict with a small child and yell at the child, they're very strong, and you know, you can get the child to behave the way you'd like the child to behave, and it's a relief, you know, wow, finally the child's behaving, until you find out the child then turns around and does the same behavior in the schoolyard. They've learned something, and it ripples out into society and maybe ripples out for a long time. Or, you know, you don't want to cause harm in the world, but then you break your mercury thermometer, and, you know, so you just throw it in your trash, not thinking about mercury going into landfill is a bad deal for our environment, and who knows what kind of damage that does. So at some point, a life of compassion is a life of wider consideration and concern for things beyond what we can even can see. The next thing about, looking at the sources of ethical action in Buddhism can be referred to as the ethics of freedom. And the ethics of freedom is when freedom in Buddhism has to do with freedom from the shorthand, freedom from greed, hate, and delusion, freedom from clinging or attachment or obsession. And so to have this inner freedom where we don't obsess about what we want, what we don't want. We're not caught up in fear, fear-based activity. And to kind of purify or free our hearts and minds from anxiety, from discontent, from being unsettled, to have the heart, the mind be at peace with itself. And so what is the actions, what's the activity, what's the speech, what do we do in the world when we come from a heart, mind, which is at peace and settled in itself, and has no agitation whatsoever, has no greed, no hate. And that kind of activity in Buddhism is said to be described, how a person who has that is that way, is said to be someone who does not kill, does not steal, does not lie, doesn't engage in sexual misconduct, and doesn't intoxicate themselves. Not because they're obligated to do that, it's just naturally what they do. They just don't do those things. And that's a pretty powerfully, a positive view of human beings, that once we get ourselves purified, that there's a natural tendency not to live in this kind of way that causes a lot of harm. So I call this the ethics of freedom. And then there's one more form of ethics in Buddhism, and that is the ethics of social harmony. And perhaps this connects to the idea of ethics of compassion, but the idea that we want to live in harmony with others is a very important principle in all of Buddhism as it's come down to us. And so it involves how do we care for ourselves as a society, as a group? And group norms and group ethics, group ways of behavior are seen in Buddhism as many times as being conventions, but those conventions help create harmony. And so how do we participate in creating social harmony in our community? And sometimes in Buddhism, the way Buddhism teaches this is a surprise to some Westerners and feels sometimes that it overlooks the value of the individual when the individual is sacrificed for the purpose of the social harmony, the group harmony. And so it gets a little bit complicated sometimes, exactly how that, you know, when does the group or the society get emphasized at the expense of the individual? When does the individual get emphasized at the expense of society? It's never black and white in one way or the other, but how do we find ourselves in this dynamic? So I guess I said more than five. There's the ethics of self-protection, ethics of personal happiness, the ethics of being on the path to liberation, the ethics of compassion, the ethics of freedom, and the ethics of social harmony. all these are different approaches to ethics or ways of being ethical, and some people will focus on certain ones of these more than others. Maybe because how we've been taught by growing up or by our society or religion, they emphasize one side more than the other. But these are all areas that Buddhism talks about. What's interesting to look at here is to assume that in different situations in our life, each of these, we do these things already. Talking about the ethics of freedom, that seems maybe kind of lofty, like, you know, I'm not free yet, but, you know, someday maybe I'll be that way. But I would like to suggest that there are particular circumstances in our life where you are free of the hindrances, are free of the defilements, are free of hang-ups. And you come from a place of, a pure heart or a simple heart or a settled heart. And where are those places in your life where you just find yourself naturally acting this way? You're acting out of kindness. You're acting out of care for others. Not even because you have compassion, but just because that's who you are. Just that's so easy and to do that. where do you already do this? Where do you make decisions, ethical decisions, behavioral decisions, what to do based on social harmony, wanting social harmony? And when do you not? When do you behave because your compassion is strong, and maybe even to the point that you're willing to sacrifice some well-being of your own because you really care about someone else? Where do you do that? one of the kind of the archetypes for that kind of behavior has to do with parents and children. You know, parents are, you know, out of compassion and care for the child, they're often willing to do tremendous sacrifice, sometimes in their own harm, for the well-being of their child. And when do you do the ethics of self-protection? When do you make decisions not to do something so to protect yourself from possible harm? When do you make choices to how to act and conduct yourself to create more happiness for yourself in your life? And you know good ways of doing that. And when do you do it as a part of the path of practice? are you interested in the path of liberation and freedom? And how much are you willing to change how you live your life to support that? So the ethics of the topic for this Dharma practice series is the mindful approach to an ethical life, with the idea that mindfulness is a central pivot factor for all these forms of ethics. The higher sensitivity we get from paying attention more carefully lends itself to becoming more ethical from the inside out. I mean, many people in the West, including myself, react to ethical teachings, moralistic teachings, those moralistic people, because ethics is being presented as something as coming from outside. Some outside authority is telling us you have to behave this way. What the path of mindfulness allows is for us to tap into wellsprings of intelligence inside, wisdom inside, that gives us the ability to be the motivations to act in ways that are self-generated as opposed to other-generated, meaning the motivation to act certain ways comes from the inside rather than from an external authority. And I think this is quite a beautiful offering that something like mindfulness or meditation can offer the world, that how we behave, the best parts of how we behave, our ethics, and can actually come from cultivating and developing a stronger sense of mindfulness, concentration, and inner well-being that comes from all this. So the last thing I'm going to say about this is that ethics, the people who react to it, like I used to, it's coming from outside, it's an authority, it's an obligation to be ethical, and as soon as you hear the word ethics, it's like, oh no, you know, now this is going to be a drag. You know, now I have to kind of live this life of heavy duty, and I have to behave right, and it's just, you know, it's just kind of like, this is not good. The idea in Buddhism is, I don't think there's any sense in Buddhism that anyone's obligated from the Buddhists. From Buddhism doesn't obligate us to be ethical, because Buddhism doesn't have an external authority like a god that tells us how you should how we should be. If you want to accomplish certain things require things of us. So if you want to learn a musical instrument, you're kind of required to practice regularly. If you want to learn a foreign language, you're kind of required to maybe take a class. You know, you can't just say, to wake up in the morning, I'm going to speak a foreign language, and, you know, then this is a burden, you know. No one's going to burden me with having to take a class. You know, this is too insulting to me and my autonomy to have to take a class. I just want to speak it. I mean, it's ridiculous, right? To learn a new language, we're required to engage in the process of learning. So that's why the path of liberation in Buddhism does require something of us, but it does. The requirement doesn't come from an obligation, but it comes from an understanding that yes, if I want to become free, I have to stop behaving out of addictive patterns. If I want to wake up to the truth, I have to stop lying to myself. They're kind of basic, you know, there are requirements, but not obligations. So, but anyway, the idea of burden, some people associate ethics with burden and a drag and all that. The Buddha's association with it, in contrast to that, is that the idea is that our ethical behavior is meant to bring us happiness, is meant to inspire us, to gladden us, to make us feel great. And it's not supposed to diminish us, but rather enhance us. And it was a foreign idea to me when I came to Buddhism that my ethical behavior was supposed to make me happy. I was supposed to feel joy and delight, because it just seemed kind of, you know, kind of odd to think about what I'd done and feel good about it and rejoice in it. And it's just like, you know, that's like thinking about the past. I thought I was supposed to be in the present. It's kind of selfish. It's focusing on me, and that's also selfish. And But in fact, our ethical behavior can be a source of great delight and joy. And it nourishes us, and it's said to nourish us on the path to awakening, to freedom. The path to freedom is I don't know, I want to say difficult, but is often takes a fair amount of effort. And it's good to be nourished and fueled by happiness and delight along that way. To cultivate a good sense of ourselves, a good understanding of ourselves, a good sense of self. And so we develop a good sense of self by what we do more than what we, I don't know, how we are. So this is an introduction to ethics. Ethics is a very important topic, and this is kind of the overview of the territory of what we're doing. So in terms of speech, the ethics of speech, it fits into all these categories. There's the speaking in ways that protect ourselves. Some people are experts at this, by not speaking at all. But speaking in such ways that you don't get reprimanded or retribution, or you know, if you speak in angry ways to other people, chances are they'll get angry back. Normally, doesn't happen, except that when I'm around flowers like this. Yeah. I just turned it off. Is that, yeah, we can turn it off. Maybe a little bit louder.
Louder?
Yeah, a little bit louder. So, so we can speak concerned with taking care of us, protecting ourselves. We can speak in such a way that we get happy. We're happy what we say. Our speech makes us happy, delighted. We can speak in such a way that our speech supports us on a path to freedom. We can speak in such a way that our speech is compassionate. Compassionate for ourselves, compassionate for others. We can speak in such a way that it helps promote social harmony, makes concord and brings people together. And we can speak in such a way that it's an expression of our own freedom. And one of the beautiful expressions that I think Gregory Kramer uses, maybe he coined it, for speaking, he talks about trust emergence, trusting what emerges. And so he has a practice of pausing, listen, pause, relax, and then when you're ready to speak, trust what emerges. And but, you know, I think you trust what emerges if you have done the inner work, so your inner life is settled and peaceful. You know, if I'm furious at someone, trust emergence. Watch out. But this beautiful thing to be able to trust what's in there and the ethics of freedom that comes, the speech of freedom. So that's the general introduction for today. So I thought we would take maybe 10 minutes before taking a break to see if you'd like to make any comments about that, or ask any questions about that, or would you like anything you would like to have any discussion about it? Yes.
Gil, what?
I don't think it's
green. Is it working?
There we go. Yeah.
I have to be a little closer. What is the difference between the path of liberation, you know, ethics of, I was confused, between the path and freedom. What is the difference between those two, or how do you see that?
Yeah, what's the difference? The behavior might be the same, but the difference is one is intentional and the other is not.
So you one know, just arises naturally.
Yeah, so, okay. You know, someone who's spiritually free will be honest. Someone who's on a path to that freedom, that path is supported by practicing honesty, even though it's hard. Boy, is it hard. But I guess I'm going to stop lying. but it's hard.
There's one right there on the page.
I have a ethical dilemma at work that I'm struggling with. Maybe I shouldn't bring it up here, but it's weighing on me. Self-protection versus acting in compassion for another person. And I'm dealing with this with an HR manager who I tried to meet with yesterday to explain a situation. She's very defensive about an employee who's uncomfortable talking to her about chemical sensitivity. So I'm aware it's being bumped up to senior management. I have to have a discussion with my boss about it. I feel like when I have the discussion with my boss, I have to tell him that the employee doesn't want to talk to the HR manager.
So the maybe this is getting a little complicated for here, if it's a long story.
Yeah, it is. I'm sorry. But I guess the question is, where self-protection and compassion for other, like I feel moved to talk to her, try again to get through, and I thought, well, maybe I should just be honest with her and say, he's not comfortable talking to you about this concern because of your reaction to it. And if I don't say that to her, then the other side of it is telling senior management of his concern. So I feel, I don't know what to do. So anyway, sorry.
Yeah, I think it's too complicated for me to really understand in this setting. Yeah. So yeah. I don't know, I feel a little, like awkward to step into.
Yeah, sorry, folks.
So maybe another time we can talk more in detail about it. But to kind of, without addressing it directly, just using that as an excuse to say something else. Spiritual teachers can be politicians too. one of the important principles for any ethical decision in Buddhism has to do with looking at our intention. So what is the intention that we have? What are we trying to do? And so is our intention really clean and good? Take courage from the intention. If the intention is a good intention, then perhaps you can start with the intention, not with what you have to say. My intention here is to help, and I don't know how to do this, but I feel like I need to say something. But please know, my intention is to be helpful. And then you have to take into account the what you anticipate the consequences are going to be, and sometimes the consequences, even though your intention might be very good, the consequences are so dire that it's just not worth. It's not appropriate to do. It has no benefit. So or you have to have a lot of street smarts and figure out just the right way to get something done and bring in a third party, a mediator, all kinds of things. And then also we want to look at and see, what are we protecting in terms of self-protection? Are we protecting, our livelihood? You're going to lose your job if you agitate too much at work. Are you protecting your reputation? Are you protecting, are you protecting something that you want to protect? Because if we try to protect ourselves from having someone not like us, no one in the world is ever supposed to not like us, then you're not free. Then you're constantly kind of, adjusting and changing and afraid and all that. It's a drag to live a life trying to get everyone to like you. And so maybe it's fine to, maybe part of the path to freedom is to learn how to be free and be in a certain kind of way, relaxed, healthily relaxed around the possibility that someone will not like you and be upset with you. And because you've done your inner work and realized that you have a good intention, realize you've done your good due diligence, you've done what you could, and beyond that, and you don't want to be a coward, you don't want to not step up to the situation. So you've done what you needed to do, and the consequences are that someone is angry with you, and you've learned that to be at peace with someone being angry for unfounded what you believe are unfounded reasons. So I don't know. So one more, and then we'll take a break.
I've been aware of, you know, right speech for a while now, and it's the hardest one for me because I absolutely get such great, you know, joy in gossiping. and like just being able to say to my husband, you won't believe what happened today.
And you won't believe just, this person here likes to gossip. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Can you believe it? She comes to IMC, and I wonder, she probably has really good gossip for all of us.
And it seems to be taking something huge away from me to be aware that this isn't ethical, that this could cause harm to people. And to me, it even feels like a really bad, like, you know, a diet. Like, I can't have sugar. I can't have fat. I have to just have this salad every day as far as my behavior is concerned.
Right.
And I just can't do it like that.
Can't. So we're going to talk about gossip this afternoon. So maybe, you know, I think it's an important, very important area. I appreciate you bringing it up. The number of times people have come to me I've started to practice regularly, and as I meditate, I find that I no longer want to participate in the office gossip. And that sounds nice to me, but then they say, but this is actually making it awkward at my office, because at the water fountain or whatever, that's the currency for how people communicate and connect. And so, you know, it's kind of like not happening in the way it used to happen. I'm kind of left out or something. So it can happen. Before, we'll pick it up again this afternoon, but what I'd like to say now about this, because of the difficulty for, you know, maybe not doing it, is that there's, you might want to look at and see what benefit you're getting from gossiping. How is it, what form of benefit are you getting? And then, and once you understand really well how you're benefiting from gossiping, then consider, are there other ways, better ways of getting that benefit? So, for example, one benefit from gossiping is that people will feel a closeness to each other. You know, oh yeah, I have that person. You know, oh yeah. And the other person, oh yeah, can you believe it? You know, and then we're all kind of like, we're in the know, and we're good people, and we're like the best, right? Because we know, because we can gossip with someone else. And so a feeling of connection. But are there other ways of making a good, really nice connection besides gossiping? And there are. So it might be easier to give up the gossiping if you can figure out how to get the benefit that you had before. We still want the benefit. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
So thank you for bringing that up. So that sets up the stage for us for the afternoon. Okay. So let's take a break. And we'll start again in here in 20 minutes, so at 10 minutes to 11.